Good afternoon and welcome to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd here every Wednesday, noon to 1, with you on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Thank you so much for making us a priority. We love being here and telling you all about what's happening in the arts community here in Kansas City. Today, we have Frank Juarez on the line. He's an art educator and founder of the Midwest Artist Studios. And here with him is Joe Bussell, Larry Thomas. Later on, we will talk to Bruce Gerstert, who has a lovely studio art gallery in Lexington, Missouri. And finally, we'll finish off with folks from the Charlotte Street Foundation. I hope they show up. So let's get started. We've got Frank Juarez online. Frank, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I certainly can. I don't know if you guys can put headphones on so that you can hear him, but at any rate, I want to tell you that Frank designed a project called the Midwest Artist Studios, or MAS Project, and the project connects two areas, contemporary art and art education. Now, the thought of traveling the Midwest and the idea of visiting studios was overwhelming for him, but he knew he wouldn't be able to do it alone, so he put together a team of art enthusiasts, which included Erica Block, who is a writer, photographer Pat Ryan, and Jonathan Fritsch as an assistant. The Midwest Artist Studio Project is a three-summer project established by Wisconsin high school art educator Frank Juarez. So we're going to talk to Frank about the MAS, the Midwest Artist Studio Project. And so welcome to the program, my friend Frank.
Thank you for having me, Maria.
You bet. So what prompted you to develop this project?
Well, this project in particular happened within my classroom. As an educator, every year there are certain building initiatives that we have to meet with our students in terms of success and readiness for the following year, whether it's upper level or college. And that was to increase literacy. And to my understanding, literacy meant reading and writing, and through some research, talking to other educators, I came to realize that it's more than just those two assumptions. And so the first thing that I did as an educator is to look through various publications as well as online resources to see what would be most practical for my students. Mm-hmm. And what I discovered is my students' reading levels are very diverse. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the online resources cater to a specific audience. And I didn't want my students to be looking up every single word.
Right.
You know, because that just takes too much time. And so I also looked through various catalogs, publications to see what was offered. And with a decreasing budget, I had to figure out a way to maximize my dollar. Mm-hmm. And whenever I purchase materials for my students, I like to purchase at least a classroom set.
Right.
And that can be very costly. And so I've learned through my own personal and professional life as an artist and as a gallery owner is sometimes instead of looking for something you need, why not just develop it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the two areas that you mentioned that I'm interested is art education and contemporary art. And so I wanted to create a project that was going to be interesting but also relevant to my students. And so with that, as many creatives, we tend to have a lot of ideas, but sometimes those ideas may not be the best ideas.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Well, and this you developed, I would say, what, in 2014?
Correct.
Uh-huh, okay.
So the first of all, I've never done anything like this before, and so I know that it's a very ambitious project, very time-consuming, and a lot of the roles that I've played were new roles for myself, so I took them right on the spot. But ultimately, I had some really good experiences dealing with different parts of what I was going to be involved with for this project, and I knew that I couldn't do it by myself. And so I recruited some friends of mine, as you mentioned, Erica Block, who's the who does the interviews, who does the catalog design and layout. Pat Ryan, who's a fellow photographer, and then Jonathan Fritch, who moved from New York to Milwaukee to Wisconsin, where he's from. And so the timing couldn't be perfect, and so I knew that I wanted to work with these three individuals because they offer something unique. And also, three of the four of us were off for the summer, so that made planning a little more attainable.
Yeah, that makes it perfect. And I should tell our listeners that you are an educator in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So, I currently teach at Sheboygan North High School, and I just completed my 15th year teaching high school art.
So, as far as this project goes, just recently you came into town, and you actually had, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 artists lined up for this year's project, which was Carrie Deacon from North Dakota, Sharon Gray from South Dakota, Jody Boyer from Nebraska, Lori Elliott Bartle from Nebraska, also Rachel Mendrop from Nebraska, and our very own Joe Bussell here from Kansas, and Larry Thomas, an educator. They're both educators, painters from Kansas City that you included in this project, and they're here in the studio live. So I'm going to welcome them. I'm going to welcome Larry Thomas and Joe Bussell to the studio.
Hi, Maria. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Joe, Larry.
So it's been a while since you've seen them, but I want to get both of your takes on this project and how you became involved and what it meant to you, Joe and Larry.
I met Frank through another project that he was doing called 365 days, 365 artists. Did I switch that, Frank? But anyway.
You did.
I'm sorry. And so anyway, we just have had that kind of online relationship. And when this came up, it was presented to me beautifully. And I just thought, wow, that's really something I'd really like to be a part of.
And I found out because of Joe. Joe had emailed me and said, you ought to apply for this. And when I read the description of what it was, and having been an educator for 40 years, having just retired, it was like perfect timing for me. So I was very excited about the whole concept and thought it was an absolutely excellent and just a great idea.
Yeah, and I do want to say just a real quick congratulations to you, Larry Thomas, for your retirement. Well-deserved.
Thank you.
You know, you went to the different cities in across the Midwest, Frank, and pulling from these arts educators and all, you developed a curriculum from their work, or how did you where did you go from there?
I wanted to approach this through two different lenses. First, as an educator, and then another one as a gallery owner. And so, as I mentioned before, when I had this idea, I wasn't sure if it was a great idea. And so I'm going to give you just a quick little backstory on the development. And so what I did is for the past decade, I've been very involved in my art community, and also I've been I'm a strong advocate for the local visual arts in Sheboygan County. And so I know firsthand how how much of a benefit it is to incorporate the local artists into the high school classroom. It's a great way to enrich the curriculum that they're being taught. And so my question was, how many educators use the local art community? And so what I did is I created a survey that I sent out via social media, focusing on educators, whether it's art or English or math or what have you. And so I was basically interested if, you know, do you use local artists? And I was pretty overwhelmed with the responses. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty, I would say, typical nowadays where the responses are very anywhere from, you know, I'm a new year teacher to I don't have the funds, if their mm-hmm. grants are too competitive, too many things on my plate, I don't know anybody in my community. So to me, those were red flags.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of knew that I was onto something, and so I took it a step further, and I created another survey, and I sent it out to the universe, to the social media universe, looking for artists. And the submission, there's no cost to submit. And mm-hmm. so there's two questions that I was very very heavy on, and that was, can you please share with me a positive experience you had in art education, whether it's elementary, middle, high, or at the college level? And then two, on a scale 1 to 5, how would you rate the importance of art education? And then from there, it was more of a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this separate from the questions that you asked, such as when you think of successful artists or where artists
yep.
live, what do you think of? These are separate?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, those questions that were, the questions that were asked by Jonathan during our studio visit
okay.
were designed by Erica Block. And so I wanted to basically kind of weed out artists that were genuinely interested in our education
mm-hmm.
and not those that were interested in just a notch in their artist resume. Because there's a commitment to this project. And so when people think of the art world, they don't usually think about the Midwest.
Right.
And it's kind of a reoccurring theme that I've noticed when talking to these artists. And so basically, I wanted to find a way that I can, you know, give props to the Midwest, because in the Midwest mm-hmm. you have a lot of talented artists, but there might not be a lot of venues to communicate that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of a search. Every summer that I sent a call for submissions was kind of nerve wracking, because there were times where I didn't get any interest, and so I became a little more aggressive. But but essentially, I wanted to represent the entire Midwest. And as you mentioned, I did visit 7 recently, and that was by far our longest trip. But we definitely had a good time. And so the artists that were selected were based on their responses, and then from there I would do a Skype interview where I would be available to the artist to answer any questions or concerns that they may have, and then also explain the commitment. But I also gave them the time to think about their decision.
Okay.
And I was very surprised that I would say a majority of them said yes right on the spot, because they just liked what the project was about. But then as far as the artwork selected, it kind of ranged between kind of a curator's perspective
mm-hmm.
and trying to put together the best roster possible to perhaps represent the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
but also to find artists whose media is transferable into a regular classroom. So I looked for painters and, you know, watercolor,
pretty good sampling,
media,
mm-hmm.
exactly, ceramics, uh-huh. and so forth. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
If you just join me, I'm talking to Frank Juarez, of the founder of the Midwest Artists Studios Project, and also in the studio I have Larry Thomas and Joe Bucell, who are participating artists educators for this project. The Midwest Artists Studios Project was a three-part project, resulting in visiting four states each summer, starting with the summer of 2014 and finishing this summer of 2016. And the past summer, he's been to Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, and visiting a total of nine artists. So for more information, I want to share the website with you, which is MidwestArtistStudios.com. And then from there, there are several links and blogs and that sort of thing, and you'll get a really comprehensive look at this really terribly ambitious project, Frank, right?
Yes.
Almost a little too ambitious? Yeah.
Yes.
So we're really happy and proud of Joe Bucell, who is a painter, educator with an MFA from Washington University in ceramics and painting, and also a degree in painting from KU, and Larry Thomas with an MA, MFA from University of Iowa, and just recently retired from professor of chair of fine arts in Johnson County Community College. So we're really proud to have you a part of this MAPS the MAPS project. So thank you for that. Yeah. Where do you go from here, Frank?
Well, we successfully completed the 3-year road trip,
right.
Which was totally awesome. And so now it's a matter of putting the content together. Mm. You had mentioned as far as the curriculum.
Right.
And I would like to point out that the lesson planning or the curriculum development, I do myself. And I use it as a way, not so much to have students kind of like copy the artist's work, but more about exposing them to different types of media and different processes.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are students that will copy what they see, but then there's other students that will use the information and kind of create their own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's just a matter of putting together our video, audio, and our photographs together. And what we're going to be doing in the next few months is putting together a catalog, which will have studio photos taken during our visits, as well as their interviews.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, there'll be a workbook where every artist is going to have a lesson designed after their
wow.
work.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, there'll be seven lesson plans. And they have pretty much your standard items, such as the National Visual Arts Standards, assessments, ways to differentiate instruction, use of technology, step-by-step procedure, etc. So it's very relevant to what's happening today in our education.
Yeah.
But I also want to point out that this publication isn't solely geared towards art educators.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of non-art educators that have used these projects in their own classrooms. So it's pretty universal.
Okay.
You know, to show different processes, but also to hopefully as witness their students say that, you know, if I live in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, I can be successful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the message that
yeah.
I want to convey. One last thing on that. One of the cool things that one of my students said a couple of years ago is that a student can be anywhere.
Mm.
And so to this day, that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And it kind of shows that they're understanding that in order to be a successful artist, you don't have to live in a huge loft, Cream City brick.
Yeah.
It can be in your own bedroom. It can be in your kitchen. You know, it can pretty much be anywhere.
Your
sketchbook, perhaps.
Yeah.
So that's a deeper meaning that I'm glad that I was able to witness from one of my students.
Yeah, that's a beautiful discovery. But, you know, I have a question, and that is, with Larry and with Joe involved in this project, now you can Skype from either one of these artists in your classroom and have sort of an interactive discussion, dialogue with your students?
Yes, and that's probably one of the best parts of this project.
Uh-huh.
And for example, there's definitely a lot of resources out there, but what I've noticed is that a lot of them is a one-way street.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
they present the information, you use it as you need to, and that's the extent of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to create a project that's 360. So, for example, as I mentioned before, there has to be a commitment. And just to point out, the artists are not financially compensated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not financially
mm-hmm.
compensated.
Yeah.
We're all volunteers with the same vision.
Wow.
And so, essentially, if an educator purchases the publication, then he or she will have access to not only the catalog publication, but also a private page on our website, which contains video of artists talking about their process, an ongoing gallery, their contact information, and also the ability to schedule a Skype session with these artists in real time.
That's terrific. I love that idea. Yeah. And go ahead.
No. I was going to say that it's been as a teacher, I've used these lessons in my own classroom, and just witnessing the chemistry that kind of happens in front of my face has just been an awe experience.
Yeah, I can only imagine. For you, Larry Thomas, Skyping with students or talking to students about your work, and your website is LarryThomasArt.com, how will this be any different than being in a classroom? I mean, how differently will your approach be to having a conversation with students?
Well, I kind of don't anticipate it's going to be a heck of a lot different.
Uh-huh.
Other than I've always taught little older students, kind of 18 and up.
Uh-huh.
So this will be a little bit different experience, speaking with high school students
mm-hmm.
Primarily. So that will be kind of maybe the biggest challenge for me, but kind of an exciting one, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I suppose that it, you know, will introduce perhaps a new audience of students to your work that wouldn't maybe have known about your work
I actually hadn't thought that, but that's true. That's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I like those opportunities. I like for that when that happens. But how about for you, Joe?
Well, first I just have to throw a big bouquet to Frank because it was so great working with him and Jonathan, and it was just a really fun experience to have. And kind of a scary one, too, because, I mean, people are coming into your studio. You don't mm-hmm. know these people, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they're videotaping you, and they're taking photographs of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out to be a really great experience. And
mm-hmm.
I really appreciate that, Frank. It was great. You were a terrific person to work with.
Thank you. I would echo that, Frank. Joe said it more eloquently.
And the beauty of it is that, you know, you felt this need, and you this is something that you wanted to do, and it really just came out of a need, but you don't have funding for it at this time. Is that right? It's all out of pocket and just through an effort of love and dedication and that?
Well, it's definitely a labor of love, but I was very fortunate to receive a grant from the Kohler Foundation.
I've forgotten about that, yeah.
And they've been very instrumental in providing me the necessary funding to pay for our basic expenses, which was the lodging and the food. But I also received a grant from the Wisconsin Art Education Association, So that's been very, you know, very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
What was interesting is, as I mentioned before, I played a lot of different roles, and so applying for these grants was definitely something that I couldn't wrap my head around. And so that was very, very helpful. And I was also able to get a grant from the National Art Education Foundation that provided me, I guess, for lack of words, a stipend to create the curriculum for this current issue. And through that, I was able to take some professional development courses to help me put some of those curriculum together. And so there has been support, but as I mentioned before, the Quarter Foundation has been very helpful. They funded the project all 3 years, which to me is very surprising. But you know, they believe in the project, and I'm very thankful.
You know,
for
and
support.
I'm really happy to hear that, because you know, as educators, it just seems like out of pocket is just sort of a common theme. And unfortunate that you know that happens to a lot of educators, arts, and whatnot. So I just want to kind of wrap things up. Can you give us some final words? I'm going to start with Larry.
Well, I just was so blown away by the project, the whole idea of interacting with artists throughout the whole Midwest and bringing attention to that and giving students hope that, you know, they don't necessarily have to fall into that paradigm of going to New York, being the suffering artist, having loft, because many of us have worked in back porches and basements and kitchens and in studios with students, myself, and that sort of stuff. And so I think that's a very important concept, particularly with the Internet these days. There's just more access.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay. Again, I want to just say thank you, Frank, and also the idea that you have given us a whole new way of sort of looking at this. I mean, I never look at myself on video or anything like that, but for some reason I went to yours and it was like, wow, you've really captured this person. I don't even know who that person is, but you've captured this person and they're making sense, and it was really, really kind of terrific.
That's beautiful. And how about you, Frank? What are your final thoughts on the project, or if you want to give us some information about links or whatever?
Sure. So the first thing is, I hope Fred's taking some photos that he can share with me.
Front row.
And then second, I do want to point out that as soon as I got back to Sheboygan, I put together a Moss artist testimonial, which features every artist that we interviewed this summer, where they talk about why they wanted to become part of the project. And I'll definitely email you that link.
Sure.
And then thirdly, well, currently Josie Osborne, who's one of our first year artists from Milwaukee, her and I are actually putting together a Moss group exhibition in Milwaukee. And we're going to be inviting every artist that we work with, which is a total of 24 artists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the culmination of this project, where educators and students will actually be able to meet the actual artists in person, but also give the artists an opportunity to meet each other and have that common experience and bond.
Beautiful.
And then lastly, I was once asked this summer, if there is going to be kind of a continuation of the project, and that person tried to the speed, and I know who it's Maria.
Oopsie.
Well, I don't want to figure you out, but
finger point. Go ahead.
But I think knowing that this isn't the end of the project is very refreshing, and I would be interested in seeing how this project develops. I think it would be awesome to develop some partnerships with some of the Midwest states, and just kind of keep building those relationships, because I think those are very important to have nowadays. And I also think that this project is very rare because every artist that I've worked with have been awesome and definitely committed to the project. So it's been a very rewarding project. I'll do it again, to be honest. So.
Well, we hope so. We hope so. Thank you so much, Frank. Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention, coming to Kansas City. Larry Thomas, thank you so much for appearing and being a part of this project, as well as Joe Bucell. MidwestArtistStudio.com is the website. Also, LarryThomasArt.com is the website for Larry's work, paintings, drawings. JoeBucell.com is the website for your work. And we thank you so much for coming in and talking with us on ArtSpeak Radio.
Thank you.
We're going to be right back after this. Welcome back to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Floyd with you every Wednesday, noon to 1. We're so happy that you made us a priority. We're happy that you've tuned in to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, because we love when you tune in with us. Next up, we have artist, gallery owner, and preservationist Bruce Burstett. He's going to talk about his new gallery in Lexington, Missouri. He also has some upcoming events, but we're going to talk to Bruce. He has the Museum of the West at 906 Main, and that is in Lexington, Missouri. He has fine arts classes in painting and history, and he offers children's art classes, adult classes that are forming, and historic preservation and consultation plus fine arts and antiques auctions. You might have known Bruce Burstert as an Oriental rug dealer and interior designer through his 20-year operation at Smith and Burstett Antiques. And so we welcome Bruce to the show. Welcome, my friend.
Hi, thank you.
It's always so good to hear from you, and it's been almost about a year since you were last on.
Yes.
So why Lexington, Missouri? Lexington, Missouri is beautiful.
Well, you know, I grew up in the Midwest, and so I really have a great love for this area, and I grew up actually across the river from Lexington in Richmond, Missouri.
Uh-huh.
That's where I did my better part of my growing up. But, I just traversed the cornfields, fields.
And it's such a shift from being, in town to out sort of in pastures.
I've always really admired the countryside. I grew up in the countryside and really love Missouri history and love Midwestern history and American history. And so I've watched the region digress and progress, whatever we're going to call it, in that regard to the trail system. And so actually in 2001 I bought a house out there in town, a big house on South Street that I restored, and it actually was the oldest wooden house left on the Santa Fe Trail.
Really?
And I left that project 4 years ago to progress into an art career.
Mm-hmm.
The business changed, and so I expected to actually live there pretty much for the rest of my life, but then I thought, I had been painting, my entire life. It's kind of been a secret.
I've seen your painting, so, yeah.
And so people really don't know me as a painter. Jim Leedy, 2 years ago, when he finally saw my show, said, I didn't know you were a painter. I always thought of you as an Oriental rug dealer. And so he didn't really, even though my business was very similar to what he had developed, and I was inspired by moving to Crossroads and by Jim Leedy, what he had built in Crossroads and as a haven for artists and that sort of thing. And Smith & Burstett had already been that, starting out on Westport Road in the late 80s with Robert Smith. We had, and that's what the last show a year ago was about, more of just the kind of roster of people that we had and the 20-minute diatribe that I gave to Mark, that solid 20 minutes of just listing, all of these wonderful people that we had mentored. And
but now you've kind of shifted gears in a sense. In
I've
that,
shifted because yeah. of my own career.
Sure.
I've shifted
Life
because
like
of just
that.
The working with artists. Before, I worked with more dead artists. They're kind of easier to work with in a way. I like selling Bingham prints and Burger Sansames and Tom Barnett's. You know, they speak my language, but they're the regionalists. You know, that I really love. I love the regionalist work, and so I really consider myself a regionalist as mm-hmm. an artist because of the focus of the art mm-hmm. In history through religion and through the loss of culture and the loss of American history and yeah. what people really know and don't know about that right now. And so... Actually, I got to Lexington in the wintertime kind of by default. Mm-hmm. A year ago, I was working on a project at 1323 Union, and that became right. kind of an environmental nightmare. So I left mm-hmm. that project, loved the West Bottoms, but it just didn't work out. And yeah. so I got sick and got displaced through the winter down in Lexington again, just by default, really. And I spent the winter there painting, and then I ended up, there was a property down by the river that came up, and it's an 1860s stone house, German, that's down on 224 Highway, which is the southern part of the Santa Fe Trail, which is actually the Osage mm-hmm. Trace and native trail originally. The Santa Fe Trail came in on top of the native trails.
Yeah.
And so that has always been a really lifelong passion, the trails mm-hmm. system and that kind of thing. And so I'd always loved this little house. It's on about an acre. It's got a really interesting piece of land with a stone 1920s gas station that was built out of the remnants of a 1860s smokehouse that came down. Mm-hmm. And so in 1929, there's this other little building. But the stone house is really kind of like very Wyeth-esque. It's very, mm-hmm. it's very Chester, Pennsylvania.
Now, is this at the 906 Main?
No, it's actually down on the river.
Okay.
It's actually...
Okay.
Considered West Lexington.
Yeah.
It's down just west of town, actually, outside of town.
So I can tell our listeners that beginning this fall and this fall in Lexington, Missouri, and in surrounding areas, a series of interactive classes, workshops, and seminars will be offered to address the art of healing, which I really love that because you ask questions. What does it mean to be well, to be whole, to not be in pain, to find peace? How do you answer those questions?
Well, through my own work, I've really found this to be a very interesting thing, you know, that I do. I realized that, you know, I'm a singer, too, and so I realized that a long time ago about, you know, when I don't sing, you know, I don't feel very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like keeping a cover on the canary's cage.
But isn't it the part of the Native American part of you that also has this need to sing?
Well, I'm not really Native American.
I mean,
I guess you could call me a Native American because I was born in America,
okay.
but I'm
okay.
not an Indian. I'm really not. I have no Indian blood. I'm kind of an assimilated Indian. I've been studying with the Indians for four years and got to sweat with the relatives of Black Elk and
mm-hmm.
lots of really interesting things that have really shaped my art in a huge way. And I've attended a lot of... When I was in New Mexico for the last... 3 years off and on, and I rented a studio for 18 months and really, really started all these different
mm-hmm.
kinds of, that's really where I just sort of started painting,
yeah.
really, in a larger sense, and started some of these ideas about healing through
mm-hmm.
art, because when I was doing Sweat Lodge, I would go and do a painting, and that's when I started the Finding the Light in the Darkness series, Darla Luz, which was based more on Goya, and I was actually mm-hmm. using the pigments that Goya painted with to do that work.
So the art of healing, with all this in mind, the art of healing has been established to help people of all ages achieve better outcomes and to find a community where healing and creativity intersect. So that will be beginning to take place this
week. We will start that. I've gotten a couple of interesting partners in this. Cindy Molino, who has done this sort of work before, has really worked with us really, really in a beautiful way. She is a minister, but she is also very interested in this kind of healing through art. And then a man who works in public administration, Mitch Landucci, who has a theater background. They both went to Benedictine. I'm the self-taught guy here, and the outsider insider, as it will. But we really see a need, and as you mentioned before we went on, you've actually worked in Lafayette County doing this kind of thing in Waverly and Dover, I think you said.
Lexington.
So we have to get you back to do that again. We've really felt, and I've seen this winter, interviewing the kids on the street, interviewing and from my fourth grade teacher, Liz Fenner, who is the head of the arts council there, we see this need for education filling in to a larger picture. But I see it in an even larger picture as far as the built environment, the loss of culture, high and low. It doesn't matter what economic level, there seems to be this need. So instead of just developing something where we get a bottle of wine and paint the same landscape, I want to really bring this into more an individuated way where we pick a theme and we kind of do a more of a interpretive thing, like I'm fearful of art, you know, is one of the things. Like, well, what is there to be afraid of? Well, there's everything to be afraid of. I mean, of course, the most frightening thing to approach is a big blank white canvas. Well, how do you break that canvas, and what do you do to go beyond all of that? The teaching and the interactive really just really interests me in a huge way. The education, the ethnic possibilities of it, bringing different people together. One of the things that I'm going to do on Labor Day is actually at the Municipal Auditorium in Lexington is a performance piece where I actually, I've been invited to do a gospel show with the black community. And I'm going to sing the Lord's Prayer with a little mixed blood boy, and but we're going to paint at the same time, and we're going to paint this prayer as we do this. And so that's something that I'm kind of working on. We have our Apples Arts and Antiques then event coming up on September 24th and 25th in Lexington.
Is this on Facebook?
It is on Facebook.
The Museum of the West?
The Museum of the West and Apples Arts and Antiques Facebook page, I believe. Yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a moment for some underwriting and final words, Bruce. I know it's really short.
Well, we have, I think I'll be back next month to talk more again about my work at 31st and Troost and the Harvest Moon Festival and Tycor. We did get a really good coup, and I do want to talk about that next time about the great designation of the historic Osage Trail Nation Station neighborhood at 31st and Troost, because that's a we're putting the original designation of the trail system back in on top of Kansas City and the region. So it's an exciting time to actually celebrate all of our ethnic diversity through art.
Very good.
So thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
We'll be on a lot longer, and you can talk forever.
I can talk a lot, you know.
We love you. We'll be right back with Art Speak Radio after this. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd, and you're tuned in to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, ArtSpeak Radio. Thank you much. Thank you so much for joining us live here. And up next, we have Patrick Finley and Ivor Finley from the Charlotte Street Foundation. They're going to talk about their project, Re-Remember Study Kansas City, a project by visiting artist Finley Sandsmark and composer Catherine McRae and local artist Gillian Tobin, and the performance will take place tomorrow, August 18th. I think that's tomorrow, August 18th and 19th. So welcome, my friends.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having us on.
You bet, you bet. So what is Re-Remember Study?
Well, I'll let Ivor, who's our guest here in Kansas City, his little crew has come here from Norway for the last week and a half, and they've been exploring and taking walks with different individuals that we've matched up with, and they're creating a wonderful piece that they'll debut tomorrow and Thursday. So, Ivor, I'll let you kind of explain that part.
And before that, I just have to give full disclosure that I was a part of this project, and it's only right because, you know, we're community radio, so
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for being involved.
Thank you.
We were lucky enough to invite you for a walk with us. And Re-Remember Study is an exploration of memory and the act of remembering and its connection to place or space. And so we've been working with these components to activate a certain part of our practice where we're normally making performances, you know, typically in a theatrical environment or in stage setting. And as our work has grown to include more of an installation environment, we had the desire to sort of get out of the theater and sort of connect with people, as well as find a way to have the exterior inform our work a little bit instead of being caught in a bubble. So in this project, we go to different cities and we invite people, like Pat mentioned, to go for a walk with us. We go ahead and institute different capturing of what that walk is via sound recordings of the atmospherics, sort of offhanded photographs, as well as a sort of activated memory of a movement vocabulary, because we are also working in that sort of choreographic realm. And then we take these recordings, I'll call them, because I think there's many different phases, and find a way to reinterpret them and re-remember them in a gallery space, for instance, where we sort of present these things in a live composition where, for instance, there's a music component that has been inspired by what the walks and the mood and the feeling, as well as these atmospheric recordings, as well as some of the talks we have with people as they remember something, an active remembrance. And then we take these, you know, our own memory of that actual process of going on these walks and communicating with people and reaching out and sort of getting different ideas about place and other people's connection to it, and sort of interpret that in a live composition where the different things are sort of feeding each other. There's like a music component and a dance choreographic component, as well as a visual art component, and how these sort of work together in cycles. And we sort of make this into a durational sort of performative effort, and it sort of cycles in and out of different feelings. But I think it gives people room to contemplate, to sort of experience a sort of the idea of what memory and how it serves both artistic practice, but also just a general idea of how it's a super relevant thing in all of our beings. We're constantly taking in memory and remembering things. And
what are some of the challenges in such a short amount of time while you're here? It's a short amount of turnaround time, I should say, because as I mentioned, the performances take place tomorrow, Thursday, August 18th, and Friday, August 19th from 6 to 9, and that's going to be at La Esquina at 1000 West 25th Street in Kansas City, Missouri, and it's open to the public. So what are some of the challenges when you see so many artists and then you've got this, the collaboration and performance?
I think this was something we were interested in getting away from what our typical thing was, where we were working for maybe 6 months on a project where we were developing material that was somehow sourced, or there was a dramaturgical element or an element of research. And so in this process, I think we were really quite the tune to the idea that we were going to come up with a form and then try to figure out getting to know a place. For instance, Kansas mm-hmm. City, I've never been mm-hmm. here. Most of the artists that we're working with, you know, that are part of the project here have either never been to Kansas City or spent very little time except for the local visual artist that we've involved in the project, mm-hmm. Jillian. So there's a certain sense about what that means and the temporality of performance, since performance is a temporary state anyway. Sure. We really were interested in how that sort of very quick turnaround and developing material and themes from each place, and also physically or you know, personally getting to know a new place and what that would mean in terms of what the material that was put into the form and the idea of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that it sort of speaks to the nature of performance or sharing something with an audience in a live composition and how these sort of feed each other and cycle through these different ideas. So I think that was kind of interesting, or it's definitely part of a process that's a sort of research about what the idea of this sort of ephemeral nature of performance or presenting something to a live audience that you're there as the artist present with them, right, sharing. And
the viewer is not going to see sort of the same performance repeated from one artist to another, one storyteller from another. I mean, they each have their own specific sort of brand or mark from the stories, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't really start playing one thing and then go through it. We sort of cycle through different things and different elements come up, and so there's a different mm-hmm. interpretation. So it's not mm-hmm. Linear necessarily, and it's okay. not a specific narrative, although I think these notions of linearity and narrative come in, of course, mm-hmm. But they sort of float through and they sort of drift through the piece. And I think as you get the sort of makeup of all the different people, not just artists that we've gone on walks mm-hmm. with, I think we've gone on like 9 or 10 walks with different mm-hmm. people, some of them artists, some of them not associated with the arts community, some of them construction workers and people we found, and how those things, the themes and ideas, and you hear certain phrases, and I think you get a picture of what Kansas City is at the moment, like mm-hmm. today, about some personal people's idea and the act of remembering of what Kansas City once was, because of course memory, you know, relates to something in the past, and also yeah. what we're at right now, and how the certain vocabulary or certain recordings of what ideas are come up. So,
wow, it's an ambitious project. And Patrick?
Yeah, it is ambitious, but you know, that's one thing Charlotte Street likes to tackle, definitely. Yeah. And we thrive on bringing in different people and connecting different artists, you know, nationally and locally together. And this, putting them in there and letting them just kind of really take this risk, these chances, and like trusting the artist to present these ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think, and watching them and working with them and seeing how we can support them and mm-hmm. see you know, what we can learn from them as well about our own city. Yeah. I mean, it's really yeah. valuable to understand those things. And you know, I think that with some of the contemporary dance things that are going on here, I think, you know, there are missed opportunities, and there's like these kind of things to bring these in and have conversations, and I think that mm-hmm. there's definitely an audience for this who want to see this kind of work.
And again, I'm talking to Patrick Alexander and Ivor Finley. The project is Re-Remember Study Kansas City. That takes place tomorrow, Thursday, August 18th, and Friday, August 19th, from 6 to 9 at La Esquina, 1000 West 25th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. And website?
Website, charlottestreet.org. Street is spelled out. You can find us on Facebook as well. That's got the event page on there and a little more details about the artist and whatnot. All fascinating artists, so I think it's worth looking up and seeing what their backgrounds and what they've accomplished already as well. It's a pretty nice treat for us.
Beautiful. And just real quickly, Ivor, what did you learn about Kansas City? What are some of your favorite things about Kansas City besides the barbecue?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. I think it's a really multifaceted city that yeah. I actually am really enthralled by, because I can't quite pin it down. I've been trying to understand it, and I still am searching. And I'm hoping, you know, maybe that fascination continues, you know, past Friday. Maybe I get to come back at some point.
I
think
that
there's this thing that I can't quite grasp. And I like that.
Yeah, and thank you, Maria, for putting me on the spot.
And I should also just mention really quick is the performances last from 6 to 9, but the audience should feel like they could come and go at any point. I think they'll get an experience that it's a thing that you can come and get something out of from being there for 5 minutes and viewing the work, or you could stay for 3 hours and continue to get work and take the time to view it. So
absolutely.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for both coming in. And, Patrick, you know what? I should have you in next week so you can come in and talk about the most recent Charlotte Street resident.
We got new residents. We got a curator residence starting. We got the Visual Arts Award show.
But you
got
to tell me next week.
Next week.
Okay.
Next week. Very
good.
Stay tuned next week.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
And Ivor.
I appreciate it.
And I also want to say thank you to Frank Morris, Joe Bussell, Larry Thomas, Bruce Burstett, Ivor Finley, Patrick Alexander. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening to ArtSpeak Radio. Honey, I'm coming home.